Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to EB5 Investment Voice. I have Mona here, and today we're going to be talking about direct pooled projects from a developer's perspective. And Mona, before we get too far into it, I know we've talked about regional centers quite a bit because it's a common vehicle for EB5 investments, but I want to ask you directly, what is a direct pooled project, and really how does it differentiate from a regional center?
Hello, Mark, and hello, everybody. And yes, thank you. Thank you for that. The purpose really of these podcasts, Mark, is not to promote any particular project, but is to really educate everybody from the developer to the investor to other interested parties. We really thought that it would be a good idea to have a direct pool project, a successful direct pool project on the show, just like we have had regional centers, and we will have more regional centers because everybody has different perspectives. But a direct pool project is very similar to a regional center project in the sense that it is a passive investment by an investor going in. And there are many different reasons why a developer may want to go to have a direct pool structure as opposed to a regional center structure.
Why would a developer want to go into a direct pooled structure?
Well, mostly because of time. They don't have to rely on a regional center being approved. It's often also, if their project is smaller, then they don't need a lot of jobs, then because the job creation is very different in a direct, as we've discussed. And so if they can create the right amount of jobs, it's faster. And in many ways, for a lot of people, as far as marketing, it is cheaper because they don't have to pay so many middlemen, etc. So there are a lot of reasons why a developer would go for a direct pool, but usually it's speed.
Okay. And just to recap, it sounds like it's cheaper because you don't have to go through a lot of indirect job creation and all the other stuff that regional centers do. The drawback is the job creation, the direct job creation for that project. But having that been said, there's not as many, consultants involved. So overall, the project setup is cheaper.
Well, either they have their own regional center, so they wouldn't have to pay for a regional center, or if they're renting a regional center, for example, if a developer's considering it, then if he's renting it, he wouldn't have to pay the rental agreement. And that's why they do a direct pooled. But don't forget, Mark, you can have a lot less investors in a direct pooled.
I see. And really the crux of this is, you know, how does it look from a developer's perspective? And I realize you have a special guest for us today.
Yes, I do. I'm very pleased to present Brandy Robinson. She's the chief of staff or controller for New Ride Transportation Group. They have a very special project in New York. Hi, Brandy.
Hi, how are you?
So Brandy, you're really here to, well, give us the developer's perspective on direct pooled. And, you know, I think this is a great idea because we could talk to some of the technical aspects as you heard Mona and I start to do a little bit back and forth at the top of the show. But I love the idea of just cutting straight to the chase and talking to a developer such as yourself that has successfully used this vehicle. So yeah, I'd love to hear about it. But before we get too far into it, could you give us a little bit more background on yourself?
Sure. My name is Brandy Robinson. I'm a part of New Ride Transportation Group. We are the developers for New York City Green Transportation Group, which is a direct pooled project. New York City Green Transportation has evolved tremendously. We started with a single division specializing in community and luxury transportation. We now have multiple divisions all geared towards specific service types, such as accessible transportation, corporate fleet, luxury, community, and also rentals.
Great, thanks. Mark, as I said to you before, you know, direct pooled is there, but there are a lot of challenges to direct pooled projects, and that's one of the reasons why we do have Brandy on the show. I thought that it would be a great idea for me to just give her or ask her some of the challenges that are out there for direct pool projects and how they faced it, and if they have any advice for new developers moving forward who would be considering direct pooled as opposed to regional centers. So, Brandy, one of the first questions that I would ask you is one of the main things that obviously you're looking for investors. What is the recognition of direct pooled in countries like China, for example?
Well, China has been conditioned to typically only consider regional centers. Investors look at direct pooled projects as small franchises. Often agents, too, they don't want to know much about direct pooled projects because they don't believe they'll make enough commission. So that was a challenge initially.
Okay. Well, you say initially, that means that you probably have succeeded yes. in getting the Chinese market.
We have certainly overcome, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard this from several different developers who have gone out market that the Chinese tend to just think about regional centers and they don't really consider direct pooled as
Correct.
Such. So where have your investors come from? Some from China, I should say?
We have quite a lot of investors from China. We have a good amount of investors and agents, actually. The challenge was overcome because I believe the project speaks for itself. This has been a thinking person's project. The first investor we have is a high-level bank executive from Singapore.
Oh, that's not China.
But even so, I'm just going through where we've actually gotten our investors from. Gosh. Our investor from Singapore understood the financial implications of our business model. Our second investor is a neurosurgeon from the United Kingdom. And actually, in fact, we've had a lot of interest from the UK in this project. And of course, one of our affiliate partners is Addison Lee, who also is based out of London. Other investors have come from Brazil, Russia, India, the UAE, and certainly China.
Wow, it does sound like you have had a real mix of investors. Mm-hmm. Randy, how many investors is this project? I mean, how many people are you actually looking for?
We are looking for 80.
80 investors. That's a very tall order. And usually that kind of number is only in a regional center context. 80 investors, you require 800 jobs. Mm-hmm. And really, you'd require well more than 800 jobs. You probably require around about 1,000 jobs for an investor to feel comfortable. How on earth are you going to meet, you know, the challenge of 1,000 jobs? And we're talking direct W-2 jobs.
So the way that we've made the job creation less of a challenge for us is that because we are in transportation and the size of our fleet, the amount of drivers to operate one vehicle is pretty substantial. So a good, I would say more than half of our employees, W-2 employees, will be drivers.
Okay, so you're basically saying that the industry that you're in, being in transportation, is a high employee industry, right?
Oh, very much so. New York City is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's the city that doesn't sleep.
Right.
Nor can we.
Right.
So,
but this is a big issue, though, because we have a lot of questions and emails which come to us on a daily basis from developers who do consider having a direct pooled because they really don't want to go into a regional center. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the issues that we do raise, that you do require direct employees. But what are one of the biggest disadvantages of having so many direct employees?
Well, W-2s, the cost of payroll, of course, I-9 audits.
Yeah, that is a big issue. And what would be the advantage if instead of a direct pooled, you were a regional center?
If we were in a regional center, most of the jobs counted would not cost us in the same capacity.
Right. Well, that is with relations to job creation. And of course, there are other challenges other than just job creation. I believe another major challenge to direct pooled projects is corporate structure. Have you found this, has your project found this as a challenge, Brandy?
Yes, corporate structure has been a major challenge, as the jobs have to be created at the correct entity, especially for a project of our size. It really means we can't continue as a direct pooled project for much longer, not because we can't create jobs, but because we've grown exponentially and require a regional center model simply because of corporate structure.
Yeah, that's often the case. Sometimes it isn't the job creation as such. It is because of the corporate structure.
Right.
And for any listeners, if they may be a little confused about that, I could just explain that by the corporate structure, we mean that the same entity where the investors are coming from has to also create the jobs. There has to be be this direct connection as they are direct jobs. And in many industries, we had a project which wanted to be a direct pull from the middle of the country, and it was a forest, sort of like a forestry type of project. And the direct jobs were coming from a team which could not be directly employed by them because they had to be specialists. So just because the team was an indirect employment, they couldn't do a direct model, even though they had enough jobs.
Right.
Right. So that sounds about right. You know, as the business becomes a little bit more evolved, a little bit more complex, it does kind of make it harder to have those direct jobs. But, you know, I was pretty interested in what Brandy said. Of course, she was saying that now they're evolving more to a regional center model because they've grown to that point. But, you know, what I'd really like to hear, since we have Brandy on this developer's perspective of a direct pooled, Brandy, was there something about the direct pool model versus the regional center model that allowed you to get to this point that it may have been difficult to do so if you started right off as a regional center?
Mark, it really comes down to speed. We've been pushed so quickly that we've outgrown a direct pulled model.
Right. That's actually interesting, Mark, because I'll say many, many projects begin as direct pooled and then jump over to regional centers, the regional center model. Sometimes for the raise, because they don't have enough of the job creation, and most of the time it's the corporate structure. But it's very common to start as a direct pooled and then jump over as a regional center.
Okay, thank you. So it sounds like it's initially, you know, pay now and wait, or go now with direct pulled, but pay more later, you know, with all the W-2s and I-9s with direct stuff. But a big operational business such as the one Brandy's describing, obviously they have the job. So let's, you know, I could see why they went with direct pulled.
Right. You've had a lot of investors, Brandy, who've come to see you. I mean, is there anything specifically that they have said that they like or dislike about the project, and in particular, direct, the fact that it is direct?
Oh, absolutely. The biggest advantage we've had is that this type of project is very transparent. For example, you can't always verify the transparency of a construction project, but you can Google the price of a car.
Right.
And also, too, all of our figures are on the TLC, which is a government website.
Yeah, TLC stands for
Taxi and Limousine Commission. Correct.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, our progress is stands out because from the very beginning, we've generated revenue. We've disclosed all that to our investors.
Well, generally, direct projects are transparent just because of the very nature of how you have to show the direct employment. So I agree that that is a plus for investors. And often investors, if they find that a project is big and it's complex, then they tend to ask for a slightly simpler project like a direct pool project. And, well, you know, what are the typical marketing issues that you've had, though, with a direct project? I mean, other than what you've already mentioned about China, what about explaining the project to investors from other countries?
The corporate structure and how the return works is a little different from a regional center. So I'd say that's the typical marketing issue that I've seen most.
Meaning that you've had a harder time explaining that, or that people have had a harder time understanding?
They've actually had a harder time understanding.
Right.
Are there things that you do, Brandy, to help the marketers understand the project a little bit better so they can represent it to the foreign nationals in the country that they're sitting in and helping?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We provide literature. They also attend our seminars. We encourage agents and investors to visit our site, and we give them a tour of all of our parking facilities, our operating facilities, to give them a better understanding of what it is that our project is and does.
Right. Mark, one of the questions that I often receive from investors, even when they've gone to visit a project like a direct pool project, is that they say, well, they like the project, etc., but their question is that in an RC model, the RC is supposed to really oversee the project and make sure everything is running smoothly. And in a direct project, there isn't an RC who's overseeing it. So, Brandy, we've had this question, you know, directed at you guys many times. Who oversees you? Who really makes sure that you are doing the correct thing?
We've actually contracted NES Financial Services to do our funds administration.
Well, that's a third-party administrator.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So basically, All of our investors have login credentials through the NES Financial website, and there's triggers. Anytime an event is created, and that's based on money movement, the investors are, one, given an alert. They can then log in and view what that event was. So the moment it leaves escrow to the project and so forth, that's where we are monitored as to what we're doing with EB-5 funds.
Right. And I suppose to say, I should also say as well that as a project, you do file the requisite compliance with the SEC.
Oh, yes.
You follow all of those. So is it different for you being a direct with as far as SEC compliance is concerned?
No, we have to maintain the same compliance as a regional center.
Right. Well, this is an issue for maybe another discussion, Mark, but right now, everybody who's a regional center does have to give the information as to how many investors and how much money they raise to USCIS at the end of the year, but direct pool projects don't. But that is going to change in the new law.
Okay, well, good to know that in advance.
Yeah, again, it's another issue that developers do want to know. They somehow feel that because they're a direct pool, do they still fall under normal SEC rules? Like, for example, do they have to have a PPM? And do they still have to report to SEC? And we tell them, yes, just like a regional center, you have to do all of these things. It's still a securities issue.
You're right. It's a securities issue because you're essentially offering an investment vehicle to the public. So, you know, whether that's for EB-5 or even private, you know, if you're offering securities to the public, you have to follow those SEC guidelines. So that makes sense. But it's also good to know that the regional centers have to report their overall numbers to USCIS. Currently, direct pool does not, but it looks like that's going to change in the near future.
Right. And I should tell our listeners that, you know, NES is a third-party portal. There are other third parties out there. NES is perhaps one of the most well-known ones. And it is obviously advisable to all developers as well that, you know, that you do have a third-party person, a third-party industry come in. Just for the due diligence part of it, for the transparency, it's always best practices to do that.
Right. Okay. Well, I have a question for Brandy, and that is, what are the challenges of being in different industries like transportation as opposed to real estate? I understand you've got a big operational structure, you know, with all these fleet vehicles where real estate doesn't. But, you know, what are some of the challenges of being in something that's different?
What the listeners need to understand is real estate is an industry by itself, as is the transportation industry. One of the big challenges we have is the comparison to Uber. Uber's not a competitor to us. They have a robust technology platform. But with just having technology and not having actual vehicles, they require partnerships with companies like ours to actually perform the service. We've met with them on multiple occasions to further our current partnership, as well as offer technological insight for AppWork for medical merchant services. Our CIO, formerly from NASDAQ, has been working closely with them.
Right. I understand there can be some challenges with, you know, internal industry competitors and comparables, like you mentioned, Uber and Lyft. You know, but specifically, I guess what I'm getting at is most of the investment vehicles that I see for EB-5 are real estate oriented.
That's correct.
And obviously, you're not, you know, your industry is transportation. So if I'm a new developer, and I'm looking at EB-5 for funding and I'm not in real estate, you know, specifically, what should I be looking for as far as, you know, challenges of trying to create an EB-5 offering that isn't real estate? In your case, you've successfully done it for transportation, but, what if I wanted to try it for something else, that wasn't real estate, but perhaps not, you know, transportation, but certainly not real estate. So really that's what I'm kind of getting at is, you know, what are those challenges of having an EB-5 offering that isn't real estate?
Mark, it's harder to sell non-real estate projects. Land and buildings, they're solid. So it requires a lot of effort on our part to promote the project as people are conditioned to think more grandeur, more glamour. We've made our investors comfortable with our project because we own all of our vehicles. We pride ourselves on setting a new standard for the five boroughs. We're in a high revenue industry. Real estate projects only make money after they've paid off all their bridge loans and bank loans, whereas we don't have those loans. So that's much easier to sell, for lack of a better word, to both agents and investors.
Well, I see what you're saying, Brandy, because, you know, transportation, especially in the five boroughs there in New York, even here in Atlanta where I live, it's the lifeblood of the city. I need to get from point A to point B, and goods need to get from point A to point B. There are service people that need to get to point A and point B to perhaps build those real estate projects that that people are touting, perhaps rightfully so, but on paper. So, you know, I like what you said there, and that is so much. You know, your asset is what you do. It may not be something that is built and fixed and, you know, should theoretically appreciate over time. But in your case, your asset is, you know, you're building or enhancing the infrastructure that helps the economy move. So I guess what I'm gleaning from that is, if I'm a new developer and I have a business that isn't real estate, I got to focus on, you know, what is, not just the value to the investor, because that, you know, that's a short circuit way of doing it. But really, you know, what's the value to the community and to the economy? And that right there would be the marketable asset. Would you agree on that?
Absolutely, Mark. Basically, we are a recession-proof project. Our assets make money from the moment they were put on the road. Real estate projects don't really have that ability to do so until they've paid off all their loans. Real estate also experiences problems in construction.
Well, Mark, I think we've heard a lot about, you know, challenges of direct pooled projects, and it's very helpful, I know, to developers. Often, you know, people who have a small project or a single project will want to use this model, and it's good to hear from a developer what the real challenges are. And I think one of the biggest challenges that I've got out of this podcast, I'm sure you have too, is the cost of having so many W-2 employees, as well as the corporate structure being a problem.
Yeah, it seems like there's even more challenges than that, because there is, you know, how do you really, you know, define and sell the asset? But once you peel back those layers and understand, you know, what it is that you do and leverage the quickness, the speed to the EB-5 market, if you will, because you have a business that has a lot of direct jobs, then it sounds like, you know, direct pooled may be a good EB-5 investment mechanism for some new developers.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing, though, is that the direct pooled projects really run under the original program, the EB-5 program. So if anything happened to the regional center program itself, projects like this would survive, you know? Not that I'm expecting anything to happen to the regional center program, but
it's a very good point. I guess this was the original EB-5 before regional centers took off, and who knows what's going to happen this next fiscal year. I know, Mona, you probably have a little bit more insight than many of us do, but no, that's a good thing to bring out, is this particular mechanism isn't going away.
Yeah, correct. There was one more point, and I'm sure Brandy can sort of shed light on this, Mark, that one of the things I love about EB-5 is that it gives opportunities to businesses which would not really be able to be so successful getting bank loans, or bank loans would be at a very high value. I heard from you recently, Brandy, that bank loans for transportation is something like 11 to 14%.
That's absolutely correct.
Wow.
That's absolutely correct.
That's high. And the same as MES loans. MES loans are high.
Yes. So EB-5 has certainly been a tremendous alternative for us as far as raising money for the project.
And there aren't many for hire vehicle type projects.
Certainly not. Correct.
I believe, like, in New York City, this is perhaps the only one.
Yes, I like to think of us as one of a kind.
And then the other factors in direct projects, Mark, would be the same as any project, like location. Location and capital stack and running businesses have the same issues as if they were regional centers, if they're a direct pooled.
That's absolutely correct.
How about the location of this project, Brandy, being in New York City?
It's prime location for us. For those who haven't ever been to New York City, my personal opinion is that New York City is the transportation hub. It's highly saturated. So the need for our service is certainly there, which makes it viable.
Well, great. Brandy, thank you so much for coming on and joining Mona and I discussing direct pooled projects from a developer's perspective.
I certainly appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
And I hope everybody can find a ride home this evening. Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Or call the office at 212-233-7473. Don't worry about trying to write all this down, as it's already embedded in your podcast player of choice. The contact information and other valuable resources can be found there. I'd like to thank Brandy Robinson of New Ryan Transportation Group for coming on and discussing with us direct pooled investments from a developer's perspective. We've got more lined up for you. Make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.